Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
And welcome to another episode of Your Dose of Death podcast. As always, I'm Lauren. As always, joined by my co-host, Mike. And as you see in front of us, we have a very special guest. I know you guys have been wanting interviews for the longest time now again. Haven't done them in a while, but lo and behold, we have a very special guest, a man who his reputation precedes him. He is a recent inductee of the GCW Deathmatch Hall of Fame, truly a legend of the genre, a man whose story is as incredible as himself. I'm absolutely honored to be introducing Mr. Insanity himself, Toby Klein. Welcome to the show, my friend. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thank you.
Well, it is so awesome to have you here. And Mike, I want you to kind of tell the story of how you two have been in contact to make this incredible moment happen.
Sure. So Toby was inducted into the GCW Deathmatch Hall of Fame back in June for Tournament of Survival. And I thought he, out of everybody who was inducted in the last couple of years, I was really just moved by his induction, his speech, and his video package. I thought everything was awesome, and a lot of the stuff that he had to say I thought was so important. So I last week just felt like writing something about getting more information about his story. So I reached out to a bunch of people, and I got put into contact with Toby through Deathmatch referee John Gray, and then we got to texting, and Toby was very, very kind enough to gave me a ton of quotes about his life and his story about becoming a professional wrestler and where he's at now. We were able to create an article for him to feature on the King's Road page. And then I reached out to him again a few days ago and was like, hey, we have a podcast if you wanted to come on. And he was more than happy to come on. And we actually got him into touch with Steve Coleman of Snack Season Hot Sauces. So, you know, Toby will be, I don't know if we can release it, but doing some work with Steve in the near future. And I've really enjoyed talking to you the past couple of weeks. So thank you again for coming on. And I'm very excited to have this conversation.
Thank you, Mike, for getting this done. This is an absolute honor. And I mean, one thing I want to start off with. So I know, Toby, one of your tag team partners was Brain Damage, who was one of my personal all-time favorites. And I kind of wanted to ask you to start off, do you have any just like great moments with him? Maybe not as the wrestler, but as the person.
Yeah, I had a lot of road trips with him. A lot of times he started at the wrestling school that I started at in early 97, mid 97 maybe, and we traveled all over the U.S. together. We wrestled for promotions all over, and we were usually against each other. We usually wrestled each other, and we would travel from we were both in the Mansfield, Ohio area. In fact, he was called Fortune Payne when he started. And he was Random Payne, a local wrestler. He was his younger brother, gimmick brother. And He was called Fortune Payne. And we wrestled in Detroit for Malcolm Monroe Sr. The DBA from Detroit, it was his father, ran a promotion up there. And during the match, Brain Damage did a dive over the top rope and his feet caught on the top rope. And he did a Superman dive right onto his head on the floor.
Oh.
And to me, on the outside of the ring, didn't get to him in time. It looked like it paralyzed him the way his head and neck hit the way his head hit the floor and his neck twisted. So, of course, I picked him right up and rolled him in the ring. And we went to the finish. And then on the car ride home, he was breathing awfully funny and seemed like he was hurting. And he looked at me and he says, "I think I got brain damage tonight." And then he says, "You know what? I like that. I think I'm going to use that as my name now." So even in the pain, he was able to come up with a character. He was a lot smarter than what people gave him
credit. I've never heard of that before.
I've never heard that either. That's an incredible story.
He was a good guy. He was very kind. He would give you a shirt off his back. He was friendly. He was kind. He was soft spoken. And then when you got him in the ring, he was one of the toughest guys you could ever be in there with.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I've always admired just his tenacity in the ring. I mean, he had such incredible matches. It was funny. I was watching TOD5 with you, Brain Damage, and Necro. Of course, Necro, Butcher, you two had a plethora, a hell of a rivalry dating back from the turn of death in 2003, as we talked about off air, and then 2004, of course. Both infamous fans bring the weapons matches. A question I have about those matches, was there anything in particular that you had to do to like prepare for someone like Necro Butcher, who is notorious for throwing really hard punches? And as you can see, even to today's standards, like one of the hardest throwers in wrestling today. Was there anything you had to do in particular?
Well, there was many times that me and Necro would find a quiet spot away from everybody else, and we would be partying until the mat, right up till bell time. We would, like I know at CZW, at ECW Arena, there was a back part of the arena with like, it was like another ring. There was an empty part of the arena, like out of view of everybody, and it had a ring back there, and we would go sit behind the ring and just party all the way up until it was our time. But yeah, I guess we would get into different forms of debauchery before the match.
I gotta ask you,
prepare though. I don't know. I thought that style of fighting was better. I liked being more physical and more intense. So it was a perfect, for that time in my life, it was a perfect opponent for me, because I would much rather do that stuff than have to sell for somebody that wasn't really laying stuff in for me. I liked working him, because you knew you were in there. You knew you were in a fight, and the crowd, you could hear it didn't bother me because I had been partying before the show and the crowd was reacting the way they were. So then my adrenaline was going and I didn't notice that he was knocking my teeth out or leaving bruises on me. I didn't really notice.
Man. I got to ask you about the VCR incidents.
I got a question to,
okay, go ahead, Mike.
Follow up that. Well, I don't know if I'm like delayed a little bit with the microphone, but you're, you know, we won't get too much into. Okay, we won't get too much into, you know, this how Toby got started. That's, you know, listed on various websites, and you guys can look at that. I do have maybe a difficult question regarding some of the things that you just said. And for those that don't know, Toby is an addiction counselor right now. And, you know, he has gone on record multiple times stating that he would help any professional wrestler who's just struggling with addiction right now, get into contact with services or himself. The question that I had is, why do you think that deathmatch wrestling in particular has sort of more of a drug problem or an alcohol problem than other forms of wrestling? Do you think it's because of some of the stuff that they're doing, or is it there's just a culture surrounding it? I know that you would have a better firsthand knowledge of that.
There really is kind of a culture around it, from the fans and the crowd partying before those events to the wrestlers all partying while they're discussing what kind of crazy stuff they're going to do. Yeah, it's just the whole thing. Yeah, I agree. It's a culture. Yeah, the whole process from partying with the fans to getting numb, if you will, before you go out there and do it. Some of the guys can do it without partying, but majority of them did. Yeah, I don't know so much now. I'm not traveling with those guys now, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Once in a while now I hear about somebody, hey, you need to reach out to this guy. And so I'll reach out to the person or to somebody that I know will get the message, hey, Toby wants to talk to you. And if they're ready, they'll talk to me. If not, they won't. I've had some reach back out to me, and I've had some that aren't wanting to talk to me. So is what it is. Yeah.
I look at a lot of the stuff that they're doing today, and I just can't imagine how you would cope with that pain. But even, you know, back in the era that you were in with, you know, King of the Death matches and CZW, the stuff that they were doing back then, in my opinion, was like just like 10 times more brutal than today. Like, I just, like, how the hell did you get through that? Like, some of the spots were just mind blowing, and all the guys were taking like brutal, brutal damage. It's just like props to you for coming out on top. It's just, it's crazy.
Yeah, I know I had torn my ACL. We had talked about that a little earlier. I had torn my ACL in 2004, and I had told Ian Rotten before King of the Death 2004 that I didn't think I could do it because of how bad my knee was. And he's like, you'll be with Necro. You'll be okay. So how many times, how often do you hear, okay, you're wrestling Necro, you'll be okay.
You'll be good.
Well, we really were, you know, it worked out.
A question I have, and I mean, for those of you who've listened to his induction at the GCW Deathmatch Hall of Fame, as Mike's mentioned, like, you are now a counselor, you've reached out to wrestlers. What made you, like, what started for you to get into that kind of profession and to be able to say, I want to help other people that were in my shoes once? What started this idea for you?
Repeat that one more time. I had a glitch on my screen.
Oh, no worries. I was just curious with the fact that you're now like a rehab counselor, that now you're really advocating for like rehab, and like helping other professional wrestlers get through what you went through. Like, what made you want to do that? What started it for you to decide, I want to help other people in this way?
Definitely going through it myself and recovering in late 2012, shortly. Brain damage died in October of 2012. And so shortly after that, I finally got it. What made me decide to finally get it was the comment that my wife had made to me. She said something to me that I knew wasn't her speaking. You hear a lot of times in like 12-step, and people have their own personal relationship with a higher power. Well, she made a comment that I knew was not of her, that I knew that it was a higher power trying to reach me directly, if that makes sense. And I thought about that comment for quite some time, and it finally started to register that I needed to change what I was doing. And I got into rehab myself. I got into treatment myself, and I stayed in treatment all the way up until I started doing schooling to become a counselor. And with other people suggesting I follow through with that route, I did. And my best counselor ever is sitting right beside me here. Yeah, I don't think I would have made it had everything not been lined up the way it was. My my wife was definitely the main motivator. Brain damage passing, that was a big part of it. What's that? What about him? Yeah, but I was a supporter for others to get into like medically assisted treatment because that worked for me. I know some people can abuse it, but I was a advocate for it because I did it correctly. And I know if other people do it correctly, it's helpful. And then 12-step meetings are helpful for some. Church is helpful for others. There's all these different ways people can go, all these different paths, but just finding, helping somebody find which path is the right path for them. That's part of the process, helping someone realize which path is going to help them. Maybe it's a combination of all of them, but yeah, just trying to help people find which way is going to work best for them to get them into recovery.
Oh, yeah. I think that's really good that you mentioned that there's different ways of recovery. And I think that's something that isn't talked about much anymore. Everyone thinks there's like one way or the other. And I think you bring up a really good point that people have different ways to their own recovery. And you went through that, literally went the whole nine yards, basically. And now are advocating for professional wrestlers. And just a follow-up to that as well. How can people get in touch with you? And is it just for wrestlers or is it anyone can contact you?
I think anyone can get a hold of me. I at the Hall of Fame, I was directly talking to the wrestlers that were there or that may have been watching. But yeah, fans. We've actually opened our home up for wrestlers to stay here. And got them into treatment, got them moved, whether it was getting them on a Greyhound bus and getting them here or going and picking them up and bringing them here. But we've actually brought wrestlers here and then helped them get into whether it be rehab or just counseling centers or doctors for medically assisted treatment. So, but yeah, I think my shoot job being a drug and alcohol counselor at a place in Mansfield, Ohio. I actually work at three different offices. I work at a counseling center called Family Life Counseling, and it's in Mansfield, Ohio. And then there's also an office in Galion, Ohio that I work at. And then there's a church in downtown Mansfield, Ohio, and I have an office there on Tuesdays. That's where I was at today. And it's more of a recovery faith-based program there. But yeah, I work at three different offices throughout the week, and I get to help people try all those different routes. Whether it's a faith-based approach or a doctor medically assisted treatment approach or 12-step meeting approach. I have all those different options for people when they come. So, but yeah, most of the people I see are just regular. Some of them are right out of prison. Some of them, they usually give me the hard people. Usually the people that just got out of prison, they send to me to work with. At the church that I work at, I notice there's a lot of homeless that come there because of free services that they can get there. So I mean, I work with a large not just wrestlers, not just wrestling fans. I work with homeless people straight out of prison. I work with everyday construction workers, factory workers. I mean, it doesn't matter who it is. If they need recovery, I can try to help point them in the right direction.
How big is your faith with your recovery? I know that we touched on that a little bit, but seems that plays a big part in your life right now.
It certainly does. Yeah, I wouldn't be here today if I would not have had a message delivered directly to me through my wife. We think that I was a month away or less. I say a month away. She says 2 weeks. She says 2 weeks away from something tragic happening, just mentally or physically. I was at the end. I was using, overdosing all the time. I've gained 100 pounds. She would say, when we would argue, she would say, eat a cheeseburger because I was wasting away. Yeah, faith definitely played a huge part. And I often will speak at churches and give my testimony. And I think it's something I feel like I'm led to do now is share my faith and my testimony.
A question I have.
I apologize.
No worries.
There's a lot happening in here.
A lot of moving parts.
Kids entering and exiting the room.
Oh, no worries. Never have to apologize.
We have a giant dog that keeps peeking in the window at me and staring at me. We have a sheep.
So I do have a question. So when you were announced for the GCW Deathmatch Hall of Fame, was that like your first time back, like around the deathmatch environment, or had you been back before your when did you retire technically from wrestling?
It says here, I don't know if it's accurate, September 6, 2018.
Okay, 2018.
But I don't know. They did update your height, Toby. It says 6'4" now.
That's better. I'm on my tippy toes. That's better. Before it said I was 6 foot. I was all slunched over.
Yeah, but like I was just curious with Deathmatch, like with the fact you got.
I've had a couple retirements. I did death matches off and on from 1998 until 2018 or 19. I did retire in 2018, put the gloves in the middle of the ring and everything. I came back once in 2019. I actually wrestled in CZW when CZW put me in their Hall of Fame in the summer of 2000. That was 2018.
Okay.
I did a death match there. I wrestled Tremont and Cannonball. Matt Tremont and Jeff Cannonball in a three-way. And then they had put me in their Hall of Fame there. Then I did a death match in 2019. I wrestled the DBA in October of 2020. And then I did a match for ICP at the Gathering in July or August of 2021. So I've had a few little one night only returns. I tried to retire in 2018, but I've had a few returns since then.
Okay.
What did the Hall of Fame?
And now October 15th of this year, I'm scheduled to face Madman Pondo. So we'll see how that goes.
Oh, okay.
What did being inducted into the GCW and CZW Hall of Fame mean to you? Just as a competitor.
I was glad that people had taken notice of what I had done. It was very special, yeah. I have a curio cabinet here at the house with those Hall of Fames in it. Yeah, I was very happy about that. 2013, ex-ICW in Detroit, they put me in their Hall of Fame. And then I was like a month or two sober when I did that one. And then when I did the CZW Hall of Fame, I was 5 years sober. And then now this newest one with GCW. It was a joke. A couple of people joked with me. They were like, you never even wrestled a match for GCW and you're in the Hall of Fame. So that's pretty good.
You would kill it if you did.
I was going to say that I would definitely pay for that. I am curious also, like, I don't know how much of the current deathmatch scene you watch these days. But, like, what are your impressions of the guys who are doing death matches now? And, like, would you have any sage advice to give this new generation of death match wrestlers?
They're going to do what they're going to do. Nobody could have told me anything. When I was doing it, when I was all over and doing it, I wouldn't have heard anybody's warnings or I would have done what I wanted to do. I enjoy watching some of them. I really enjoy Schlack's promos. I get a big kick out of his character. Some of the ICW pit matches are pretty good. Some of that stuff that Danny's putting out is really good. What's the big guy with the mask? It looks like a deathmatch version.
Cool.
Yeah, he's fun to watch. Man. Akira, he's fun to watch. I see a lot of these guys and I'm like, man, I would have been fun to work him when I was in my prime. Yeah.
But you are
Eric Ryan, he's fun to watch.
Yeah. That's a good one. I didn't mean to interrupt you at all, but I know we should maybe promote this a little bit. You are having a return match against Pondo. You did mention that'll be next month in Ohio. For everybody in the area. And I know you were kind enough to invite me as a guest, and I'm gonna try my best to come. I'd really love to have an opportunity to see you in person. You mentioned that, you know,
you're doing the hot sauce challenge with me if you're there.
I'll do it, definitely. You mentioned that before your matches in your prime you would hang out and party with Necro. That's how you get ready for your matches. How do you get ready for a match now with this new sober life? How do you get yourself in that mindset if you are doing some crazy spots or weapons or a death match? What's your pre-match ritual now?
If you've watched any of my matches the last few years when I have had them, I don't do that crazy stuff anymore.
You have taken some spots though that were pretty rough.
Yeah, I mean, I've done some. I guess it's more theatrics now for me. It's the sell, you know, if you get, if something looks like it was crazy, then you sell it to the extreme. Yeah. Maybe one big thing and then you sell it and then, you don't have to do anything else. You can lay over in the corner while everybody else does the crazy stuff.
Calm down a little bit.
I really like, Terry Funk in his older years, when he would do something big, he would really sell it. And, yeah, I understand why.
Got it.
I do have a question for you about, since you did travel a lot in the earlier days, I'm always curious what the locker room culture was like at the shows back in your day. I know in today's day and age, there's a lot of transparency about how like indie wrestling locker rooms are. And we've heard from multiple wrestlers about it, but I want to hear, like, what was your impression of the locker rooms you yourself were in back in like 2003, 2004, 2005? What was your impression of those locker rooms back in the day?
I regret not being more sociable with socializing with the guys more, because like I said, I'm sure I would grab one of the guys, Necro or one of the other guys that partied, and we'd slip aside and we wouldn't talk to anybody for years. I was like that. I regret not being more socializing more with the locker room, because I just sort of did my own thing. I know a lot of people told me later they were afraid to approach me. People told me, they're like, well, you and Necro went off in the corner. We didn't want to bother you. We didn't want to say hi or nothing. So I regret that was the way they felt. And that's the way I was. I regret that.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
It's interesting you bring that up. It's interesting because I've heard from another wrestler how like all these younger guys coming in, they're like, oh, they think they know better, so they don't talk to the veterans. I think you know who I'm talking about, Mike. With they're like, oh, like they don't ask for advice on matches, they don't ask for advice on like how to work things. So it's interesting hearing even back then that sometimes people thought differently, but it is really interesting hearing your input about being more sociable in locker rooms. And now look at you, you're working three different offices now. And I am curious.
You are very sociable now, Toby,
yeah,
by the way.
It's like a nightmare.
You're very
difference.
Easy to talk to. Yeah.
I do have this question though. looking back a year past, what would your current self like to tell your past self? Like, is there anything you would change in the past if you had that opportunity?
I think if I would have taken my physical health more, my mental health and my physical health more seriously, I could have probably made a lot of money in the wrestling business, whether it had been in Japan or WWE. I blew a lot of, I squandered a lot of opportunities because I was rather be partying than taking it seriously.
Yeah, you're one of the biggest deathmatch wrestlers ever.
So I would tell my younger self. I would tell my younger self to take it a little more seriously. Knock off the stupid stuff and take it seriously.
I was saying, Mike, you had a question?
Well, I would just I definitely agree with what you said. You're, you know, like 6'4" and huge. There's people aren't as big as you in the deathmatch scene now. Like, it's crazy. You're a monster. So I agree with that for sure.
I've never met Cruel in person. Is he 6'7"?
Yeah, he's 7 foot. He's legit. Dead. I've stood next to him. He is legit 7 foot.
He has a good look. I hope he stays on track because he can make some money. I bet he'd be big in Japan. I don't know if he's gone there yet.
I don't think so yet, but I agree. He would be a very big deal in Japan, I feel like, if he went over there. But I think he's very regional to his territory. So I don't think he doesn't travel as much, except for maybe ICW, from what I've been aware of.
Toby, I got to ask you this. What? So I talked to Pondo in Dallas. We spent the whole weekend together, went out to eat and everything. And I did an interview with him for my page. So I want to get your point of view with the infamous pencil spot.
It would have been at Tournament of Death 2005.
Yeah.
Did you think that was crazy at the time, or were like, it's just looking back on it, it's nuts?
I wanted to take scissors before we went out there, and I wanted to snip off the points off of all the pencils. I told him, I said, if it's in the ring, they're not going to be able to tell. Nobody on the outside of the ring will be able to tell that the points are gone. Maybe get a shot of it in the locker room, have Smart Mark record a shot of it on the floor with how sharp it looks and zoom right in on it. And then we can gimmick it and then take it out to the ring and nobody will know. But Pondo didn't want it touched. He wanted it taken out there the way it was. He didn't want anyone to mess with it. He didn't want me to cut the tips of the pencils off. He wanted it left the way it was.
It's funny you mentioned scissors because one of the matches I watched of yours recently was the Fans Bring the Weapons match at TOD5 with you, Brain Damage Necro, and you took scissors to Brain Damage's, like, his piercing.
It was like
on
a pair
his eyebrow.
It was a pair of hemos and I snapped onto him.
Oh my God. Did you think that was outrageous for the time, or was it just like, oh, just going to snip off this eyebrow piercing? No big deal.
Most people would come up to me with an idea and I'd be like, all right. And then I would help them see that idea through. All these things that you're telling me about, like the pencils and the eyebrow, these were not my ideas. Other people brought this to me and I was like, yeah, we can. The VCR was my idea.
Okay, the VCR was your idea? Okay.
The other stuff. The VCR was on the fly. I seen it land there and I'm like, he's giving me some good shots this match. Time for my my comeback now, so yeah. Here it comes, receipt. Yeah, and then I made Mike Burns do a funny dance. If you can see the other clips, if you can see, there's one, maybe it's on YouTube where I've seen it, where it shows a bunch of different angles of the VCR hitting.
Yeah, I literally just watched that today, and the guy's like losing it over Necro selling it. I'm like, how about the fact that Toby just threw that clean flush to the head?
That is Necro
still continues the match. I caught him pretty good.
You did.
I caught him busted. Yeah, but Necro gets hit, and you can see in one of the views, that Mike Burns is doing a funny dance. He's dancing all over. And so that's why I watched it, just to see Mike do a dance when I hit macro.
Was there anything you said no to back then? Either to you doing or taking?
I don't remember which deathmatch tournament it was, but somebody wanted to put me in the spiderweb deathmatch, like what JC Bailey and Pondo did.
Oh, like a barbed wire spiderweb?
Yeah, they wanted to do something like that, and I didn't feel comfortable with the bump from as high up as it was.
Oh,
and
so okay.
I asked them to not put me in there. I said these other guys may have something cool they would want to do. And to me, the only thing cool I could think of was doing like throwing somebody from the top up there down, and me watching from up above as someone falls on it. And everybody wanted to see a double bump when they wanted to see two people go into it. And I definitely didn't feel comfortable about that. So I told them it probably wasn't for me. It was weird because whenever there was a high bump, I would either want to do it alone. I wouldn't want anybody falling with me. And an example of that I can think of would be at Tournament of Death 2006. I think it was me and Brain Damage and Necro in a three-way.
Oh, yes.
And Brain Damage and myself were on top of the U-Haul truck.
Yes, that's
and
right.
And Brain Damage hip tosses me off of it. And I go off by myself.
Yeah, I do remember that. And I was like, oh, interesting.
Yeah, so whenever I was up in a high spot like that, I always wanted to either be throwing somebody or I wanted to take a fall by myself. And somebody, I think it was Ohio Hatchet Wrestling, but I'm not real sure. I think it was a promotion that Viper, remember Viper? Viper was
not familiar.
Yeah, I don't know that either, to be honest.
Deathmatch wrestler from like West Virginia and Ohio.
No, yeah. Not familiar.
I think it was his promotion or a promotion he was booking for. But I didn't feel comfortable doing that. Yeah.
What about the glass back then? You were fine with all that?
Funny story about the glass. I had a knot on the middle of my back that kept getting bigger for years. And I think it was in my back from 2006 until 2019.
Wow.
But in September of 2019, I actually had to be hospitalized. I went to a doctor and they tried to remove it and they said that it was in my spine. They said, we can't.
The glass was in your spine?
And there was an infection. Yeah, there was glass in my back and there was an infection. And so it was like the size of a softball on my back.
Oh my God.
And so I had to be hospitalized for several days and they removed it.
How did they like remove that? Like you're saying the size of a softball, the infection was?
They drained it.
They drained it, okay.
Yeah, they drained it.
And that's all from a light tube?
They pulled little pieces of debris out, which was the like little tiny slivers of glass, and then they drained the fluid out.
I'm sorry to bring that up.
but I did it with no Tylenol, no...
You know, yeah, you won't take a Tylenol.
Yeah, I did.
It's nuts.
The only thing they gave me was antibiotics.
Oh, my goodness.
Toby, you're a stud.
And the doctor said everybody always wants pain meds for that kind of stuff. He was surprised that I didn't want anything, so I had to then explain my story to him. I said, I'm an addict, don't give me anything. I'm a drug addict, don't give me anything.
Oh my goodness.
Seems like a lifetime ago. When I say that, it's weird because I mean it's 10 years. February 4th will make 10 years from anything. It's coming up.
Congratulations.
Congrats.
And it seems like so long ago. And it seems like just yesterday. It's weird. It seems like it was so long ago than other times that I can remember it like it was yesterday.
It's I gotta get your thoughts on deathmatch tournaments. Like how did you like them? Did you not like them? Like what was your thought process with tournaments itself?
By the way, you've been in deathmatch tournaments since 2001. I'm looking through this now. You've been in like 2000. A ton.
King of the Death 2000 was my first.
Oh, you're right. Okay.
Me and Brain Damage rode together to IWA Mid-South. We showed up an hour after the show started. We got there late. Typical fashion for me back in the day. I would always do that. And Ian would not put us on night one, but he said if we hung out, he would use us in night two in a non-tournament match. So my first King of the Death was 2000. We were non-tournament the second night, and it was me versus Brain Damage. And I had lost my ring gear. It was at a airport somewhere, and I had no ring gear. I had to wrestle in street clothes that first King of the Death. But yeah, then I did King of the Death 01, TOD 1, King of the Death 03, King of the Death 04, King of the Death 05, 06, Tournament of Death 2007, Tournament of Death 2009. I think I did King of the Death 2008, but I think it was a non-tournament. I think I was there for both nights, but it was non-tournament matches both nights. Then around 2010 or so, I didn't do any for a while. My addiction got really bad around 2010. And so I would miss a lot of bookings. I think I was untrustworthy to book. I don't think people wanted to take the chance. I know when I did the 10-year stretch there from 2000 to 2010, I did like doing the deathmatch tournaments because I would charge what I thought was fair, and then they would have me do multiple matches. So I would charge that per match. So that paid so much better than a regular. For a drug addict, that was a good deal. I was getting paid quite a bit of money for to use that night. All my money was gone by the time I got home, but I was getting much more than I would have gotten regular matches.
That is an interesting point you bring up. I mean, yeah, back then it's like, I didn't think about that, charging a different rate for that. Was it a different rate for tournaments versus a singles match?
Yes, I would have a set price for a death match. And if they wanted me for multiple matches, I got times two, times three, whatever, however
many matches
they had me doing.
After, you know, the 10-year stretch that you just described, what's your most memorable one?
I did random death matches after 2010. Like 2018, I did Tournament of Death. I think that was a non-tournament match. It was me and Trima and Cannonball.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember if it was tournament match or non-tournament. But I did like tournaments here and there, but none of the main ones. It was smaller ones at that point. But what were you asking? What was a memorable Tournament of Death for me?
Your most memorable tournament in that 10-year stretch that you had. Or your favorite, maybe something that sticks out.
I talked about it at the Hall of Fame. The first Tournament of Death, I was Nick Gage's first opponent in Tournament of Death. So that was, I guess, pretty cool. Looking back at the history of the TOD, I was the first opponent for Nick Gage. I was the first guy to go to the finals 3 years in a row in King of the Death. 04, 05, 06, I was in the finals. And then I had won 05. So 05 was memorable to me because I had won it. Mm-hmm. 06 and 07, I got to face Brain Damage each of those years. TOD 06 and TOD 07, Brain Damage was my opponent. So that was cool being able to work with him because he was a student of mine. So that was neat to be able to work him.
In 2005, you had a three-way 200 light tube final that you won with JC and Necro.
Was that legit?
I'm not sure.
Any we'll fun stories good. About JC Bailey? I always hear really cool stories about JC Bailey.
Did you ask me for a JC Bailey story?
Yeah, any cool stories about JC Bailey?
You know what was really neat? We went and did some mission work in Kentucky last month. There was some bad flooding in Kentucky, and we went to this place. It was Floyd County, Kentucky. It was about 6 hours south of here, and we just randomly picked which way to go. we were like, all right, this road dead ended. The flood was this whole stretch of road. We want to go left. We had supplies in our vehicle. And we're like, we want to go left or we want to go right. Let's try left. Nicole, you picked left, right?
Yeah, she's on the lefty.
My wife picked left.
Good pick.
Good pick, yeah.
So we come to this community center. Jack Horn, Kentucky. About 10 minutes from Virginia. And this town was leveled by flooding just a month earlier, less than a month earlier, 3 weeks earlier. The whole town of 200 people, the flood water was up to their roofs in the middle of the night. They had to climb out their windows and sit on the roof until people came and got them out of there. So we're going door to door handing supplies out, waters and toilet papers and deodorants and stuff, whatever we could give them. And we come to this community center with the remainder of our supplies, and we asked them, can we donate our supplies to them? And so we got to talking to the lady that ran it, and it was called Black Sheep Oven. She was running a pizza shop there for the community, feeding the community. A lot of people didn't have power. And so she's taking me around the building, and I'm like, you guys got a gymnasium in this building? And I said, the first thing that pops in my mind is we do a charity wrestling show for the community.
Okay.
She's like, wow. She's like, 20 years ago they did that. A guy named Joe Bailey came here and did wrestling shows. And I was like, are you kidding me? I was like, my son is named after him and his boy.
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty crazy that the route we randomly picked that day to go drop supplies off to people, it was a connection to Joe Bailey.
That's from above, for sure.
But J.C. Bailey, he was a great guy. I got along good with him. We were going to get married, and we told him our idea of getting married in a wrestling ring. My idea of getting married in a wrestling ring, and somebody went along with me for the... somebody let me do it. And I asked J.C. Bailey if he would be game to help us with that process, and he was going to help us with that. He was going to bring his ring to wherever we needed it. And he was going to let us get married in a wrestling ring.
Oh, wow.
Unfortunately, he passed away before we were able to get married. Just roughly the same time as our boy was born. My son Owen was born maybe a week or two before JC had passed away.
Oh, wow.
But we didn't get to use his ring. But he was ready to bring his ring wherever we were to get us married in a wrestling ring. Good guy. I got along great with him. His dad, too. I got along with Joe Sr. also.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Awesome story. Yeah. Wow.
This has been such an incredible conversation with you, Toby. It was, to me, like, so fun story on my end. When Mike texted me, he's like, Toby Klein wants to do Your Dose of Death. And I'm like, wait, did I read that right? I had to like make sure I double checked that I made sure I was the right person. And then like immediately I was like, absolutely. Like literally this has been like an absolutely incredible trip down memory lane. And I'm really glad you shared your story about overcoming addiction and now becoming this rehab counselor. As you've heard here, guys, like three different methods of work, three different offices. I think that's, you're doing an incredible job with being a counselor now. And I mean, I feel like back then I've always thought that I myself have struggled with mental health. And I went through my own battle with mental health back then, but hearing other stories and hearing through a counselor like yourself, It gives me solace in knowing that people are getting help out there. And so, I mean, from me personally, thank you for what you do. Like, it's incredible what you do on the level you do it in such a wide scale too. Like, there are counselors who maybe have their own regions or whatever, but you have such a wide net. Like, sometimes that you don't really hear about that. And I think it's just an incredible story. So I really commend you and thank you for sharing that story, Toby. Thank you.
Thank you. It was my pleasure living it.
I think your Hall of Fame speech really was very impactful. And
I always do, whenever I speak, I do speaking engagements at, I've spoken at prisons, I've spoken at churches, at rehabs, at schools. I've done speaking. I try to get speaking gigs wherever I can. And I always do them on the fly. I never prepare anything. I just go up there and start talking. And that was what I did then. I just went up and started talking.
And I remember Deranged, who was inducting you, having kind of a hard time. But I mean, it was really awesome that night that we all kind of came together to support him as well when he was inducting you. So I thought that like made the moment all the better, honestly, like the camaraderie of the deathmatch community really in like one moment that sometimes doesn't go. I remember when I was there, I was like, this is really awesome. And all, I didn't hear many people talk about it, but I'm like, this is the coolest freaking moment you could possibly have. Like one of your good friends get inducting you. We're like getting him the support. And then you go up and you put on this incredible induction speech that really moved. I think it was a really silent crowd when you spoke. I remember that night vividly. And I was like, this is the cool. I remember saying to myself, this is the coolest induction speech I've ever heard in my life. Like, I remember that.
I like wife beaters.
Beaters. Short and sweet. Short and sweet.
That was great getting to catch up with him. My first time ever at ECW Arena was against him. So it was great being able to work with him years ago.
As we're kind of like wrapping up here, again, thank you so much for coming on. This has been absolutely incredible to have you on and just share your story and just share, go down memory lane as well. Do you have any advice for anyone who is struggling with mental health or anyone who is struggling with addiction who may or may not be listening to this right now? Like, do you have any just simple words of advice?
People are out there that can help. Don't wait until you are thinking doing something drastic. 80 wrestlers. I wish that wasn't true. 80 wrestlers that I've been in the ring with have either died from suicide, heart attack, brain aneurysm, overdose, murder. And none of them were old. None of them had died of old age. They would have reached out for help. It would have been there for them, and it would have saved them, every one of them. Time and time again, it happens. And if they would have just realized that there's people out there that they could reach out to for help, they don't have to fight their struggle alone. There's people out there that can help them.
I think that's a really good place to stop, Toby. This has been an absolute honor having you on. This is, again, for anyone listening to this, just know that you are not alone in this battle, that you are not alone in the good fight of just taking care of yourself. And I think, Toby, you're an absolute inspiration to anyone who's listening to this and anyone who has gone through the same thing you've gone through. From the bottom of my heart, thank you for sharing your story, Toby. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and, thank you, Toby. I hope that we stay in touch and get to see each other again. And it's meant the world to me that you that we've been able to talk and that you came on.
Does Pondo? You said Pondo watches your show, or he comes on your show?
Pondo and I are Pondo is a follower of my page, and we became friends in Dallas. So
we'll work on Pondo.
I can tell him anything you want me to tell him either.
Pondo, if you're watching this show, Saturday, October 15th in Bucyrus, Ohio, Crawford County Fairgrounds, I'm gonna splay and flay your skull like a rotted pumpkin.
That is okay. That is a great way to end this show. Thank you guys for listening to this. Thank you guys for watching this from Lauren and Mike and from our new dear friend, Toby Klein. Thank you guys so much. Have a good rest of your day. And whenever you're listening to this or watching this, thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Your Dose of Death.
This has been a Countout Podcast.